Hello, I'm Liz Thompson, managing editor of From the Ground Up. Welcome to the From the Ground Up podcast, an audio companion to the quarterly magazine about conservation, climate, and communities in New England. Today, we're talking with a familiar and essential voice in the climate conversation, Bill McKibben. Since publishing The End of Nature in the 1980s, Bill has been a steadfast advocate for addressing climate change, writing regularly for The New Yorker and other magazines. This year, he released his latest book, Here Comes the Sun, and together with Third Act is organizing Sun Day on September 21st. In this episode, Bill takes on the urgent challenges confronting the U.S. and the world and highlights how clean energy can help chart a sustainable path forward. Here is Power from the Sun, Hope in a Shattered World by Bill McKibben.
It's been the most brutal 6 months for the American landscape in the history of the Republic. Since Donald Trump's inauguration, his administration, composed largely of people who spent their lives extracting resources or lobbying to make that extraction easier, has managed to undo a great deal of the hard work of generations of environmentalists. They've undone the roadless rule, which dates back to the Clinton administration, and they've mandated steep increases in the cut on national forests. The newly passed budget bill will double the timber harvest over the next 9 years, taking us back to 1990 levels. They've gone to work rescinding habitat protection for endangered species, and they've opened up millions of acres in Alaska to drilling and mining. All of these initiatives will be fought in court, of course, and some of them will be easier to realize than others. It's not clear, for instance, where the mill capacity to handle vast increases in timber cuts will be found. But on every front, a fast-moving, ideologically committed administration is moving to loot the 50 states in the guise of an energy emergency and a timber emergency. The ability of the administration to function in emergency mode, to ignore or suspend time-honored practices of consultation and comment, has left the environmental community squarely on the back foot, clinging to practices that may have no real purchase in this new world. That's especially true since it's not clear that the Supreme Court won't go along with these push-the-envelope tactics. They've systematically empowered the executive branch over the last few years and show no sign of stopping. But of course, that's not the only thing happening to the American landscape and the global landscape. We're also seeing an accelerating heating of the planet that's producing the by now expected freight of fire and flood. We understand more about what's going on all the time. New data shows a tripling of extreme summer weather events, for instance, because the melt of Arctic ice is cutting the temperature differential between the equator and the poles, and thus throwing the jet stream out of its customary patterns. Meanwhile, ocean temperatures continue at all-time highs, and the resulting storms are increasing coastal erosion even as sea levels continue to rise. And, just to add a little fear, the latest research shows that the great Atlantic currents have begun to flicker and falter, raising the prospect of radical and desperately fast changes in both the temperature and the height of the ocean. It's possible you won't have to pay any attention to this much longer, though. The Trump administration is also relentlessly cutting the budgets of every agency that monitors these things and shutting down the feeds off the satellites that until now have provided us with a snapshot of our impacts. We are choosing to bury our heads in the hot sand. Against all this, there is, as far as I can tell, precisely one hopeful trend on the planet, and that is the very rapid rise of the capture of energy from the sun and the wind. Since the climate crisis is caused mostly by burning fossil fuel, anything that allows us to dispense with them is helpful. And there's a lot of that dispensing beginning to happen. In California, for instance, enough solar panels and wind turbines have got up in the last few years that the world's fourth largest economy now generates more than 100% of its power from renewable sources for long hours almost every day. And enough batteries have been installed on the grid that when the sun goes down, they're running much of the Golden State off stored sunshine all evening. As a result, California is using 44% less natural gas to generate electricity this year than it did in 2023. That's a big number, big enough to matter in how hot the planet eventually gets. It's not without cost. The solar arrays need to be sited somewhere. They take up land. They require minerals to work. The mines take up land too. But the mining is minimal compared to what the solar arrays replace. A new study last year from the Rocky Mountain Institute found you'd need a smaller volume of mining to extract all the minerals needed for an energy transition through 2050 than the volume of coal mined last year alone. Here's a way to visualize this. 40% of all the ship traffic on our planet simply carries coal, gas, and oil back and forth across the planet to be burned to provide energy, a job the sun is willing to do for free. As for the land taken by solar arrays, it's not, according to Stanford's Mark Jacobson, more than the footprint of oil and gas in our landscape. And when it's done right, it can be a blessing. I've spent time in several Vermont solar farms that have been sown with pollinator-attracting plants between the rows. The number of insects soars by orders of magnitude over a standard-issue cornfield. Species long thought to be extirpated have somehow found these patches of plant and have resumed standard operations. But again, nothing comes for free. My state of Vermont has long had, for instance, a de facto moratorium on wind power. We don't need a turbine on every mountaintop, but we do need them on some. I continue to work and hope for a few atop Middlebury Gap, where I live. So for me, the tasks of the moment are twofold. The first is to play what defense we can against the egregious steps the administration has undertaken. At Third Act, where we organize people over 60 for action on climate and democracy, we're good at everything from fighting elections to intervening in public utility commission proceedings. The second task is to play offense in the one place where we've got some momentum, clean energy. That's why we're coming together across the movement on September 21st, the fall equinox, for what we're calling Sunday. It's a celebration of the possibilities for clean energy, with the goal of making it clear to people that this is no longer alternative energy, but instead the obvious, common sense, and beautiful way forward. Imagine a planet where we cease combustion and rely instead on that large ball of burning gas hanging a convenient 93 million miles away. It could transform, among other things, our ruinous politics. The sun is an energy source that can't be hoarded, and that you can't fight wars over. Putting it to good use would change the nature of both power and power, if you see what I mean.
Thanks for listening to From the Ground Up. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an issue. And if you're tuning in on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, take a moment to leave us a rating or review. Your support helps these conversations grow and reach more listeners like you. For more stories, artwork, poetry, and perspectives at the intersection of conservation, climate, and community in New England, visit fromthegroundupne.org. From the Ground Up is published quarterly by Wildlands, Woodlands, Farmlands, and Communities, and supported by the Heistead Foundation. Subscribe for free and join us each season as we share stories that inspire connection and action.